That's not Irish enough for you.
It's a lovely song.
And that's Stephen Foster's original guitar accompaniment, too. He was quite a proficient musician, that a lot of his songs were published with both piano and guitar accompaniment.
I wanted to ask, did he perform also? Did he tour at all?
He was, first of all, he was the first American to really set out to make his living as a songwriter. Now, when he was a young man, he and his friends did their little gigs at an ice cream parlor. They got started there. But he was unlike so many other figures of that time who traveled around from city to city and played and sung and performed their own songs, you might say hawked their own music. He really was more interested in just songwriting itself, and for a time being was able to make a very comfortable living. We have records that show how much he earned. Like many people yesterday and today, perhaps he wasn't as prudent about saving his money or investing it, so he ended in poverty, but he was, for a period of years, he was quite successful. He made some unfortunate decisions and contracts. He sold the rights to some of his songs he got advances from his publishers.
Right, and they didn't have the copyright laws they had today, so his songs would be published in Europe or in the South, and he wouldn't get anything for it. But he actually had an office downtown, and he would go and do his composing there. And so he really tried to make a career as a songwriter. He's considered to be the first, as Gene said, the first American to do that.
Did he do most of his work in Pittsburgh, or did he leave after a while?
He eventually went to New York. He felt that it would be profitable to be closer to his publishers. His wife and child remained here in Pittsburgh. But the better part of his life was spent in Pittsburgh and vicinity. He never traveled. The Suwannee River, which is down in Florida, the name of the river was picked from a map. He had originally written the song way down upon the Petey River. And his brother and one of his colleagues thought that that didn't sound very euphonious, which of course it doesn't. So the story is that either his brother or Henry Claiborne, somebody anyway, brought him an atlas, and they just went around looking for a river named Suwannee. Ah, so that's how Suwannee got into the song.
So he needed a two-syllable river that was mellifluous.
Right, that's mellifluous, so Suwannee it became.
And Kentucky has claimed him with the Stephen Foster story, but he is ours. He's a Pittsburgher.
He's really ours. People think he grew up in Kentucky.
Right,
old Kentucky home. They're erecting statues and home places and all birthplaces.
That's right.
But he's ours.
Should we go back to some
Irish? Yeah, back to Thomas Moore.
Last Rose of Summer.
Oh, I'll tell you, this is so, it's a marvelous example of how Irish music flourished. This is originally a traditional Irish tune, and first of all, Thomas Moore got his hands on it. Thomas Moore was an Englishman who transcribed so many of these tunes, and they first became popular in America. It was used lifted wholesale and put into an opera. We have guitar variations. We have this marvelous flute variations. We have piano variations. We have vocal and so forth. So let's give them a little sample of how this Irish tune, The Groves of Blarney, has grown into so many different versions.
Yeah.
How should we do this? Do you want to play some guitar variations?
Yeah, let me do that first. And
do your guitar variations?
I have some guitar variations on The Last Rose by Justin Holland, who was a guitarist from Ohio. He was one of the first blacks to get a degree from Oberlin College, and was a well-known mid-19th century guitarist. We would now sort of refer to him as a classical guitarist, but he went off and studied European guitar music and South American guitar music, and incorporated different ethnic ideas into his own writing, and the form that he used most frequently was theme and variation. So this is two variations and the theme on Last Rose of Summer.